You're listening to the Bliss Runner Podcast, episode number 15. This podcast is for any woman who has ever had a challenge in her sex life. Whether you've lost interest in sex in your long-term relationship, orgasms have become elusive, or you've just been longing for something more, something deeper that you can't quite even articulate, this podcast is here to help. In this show, we'll explore how you can transform your experience of sex by learning the subtle art of awakening your sexual energy. Now, this is not just woo-woo stuff. It's tangible, and it's having a profound effect on women's lives. We'll hear stories by women like you and me who've moved from lack of sexual enjoyment to incredible, expanded, ecstatic states by accessing this energy inside. We'll also talk to authors, teachers, and practitioners in the field for guidance on how you can get started on this deeply gratifying journey. I can tell you that it has completely changed my life, and I know it can enrich yours. I'm really glad you're here. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the show. I am really excited about the guest I have today. His name is Chase Reeves, and he's going to share with us his unique perspective on Kundalini energy and how it is affecting his life. He has been a spiritual seeker since way back in high school, and his entire journey led him down a path that eventually had him stumble upon some experiences that unlocked this Kundalini energy. And he's still in the thick of it. He's trying to understand what's going on and how to incorporate it into his life. But he's a great speaker, really interesting guy, so much fun. So let's get right into the conversation.
Yeah. Okay. So here's where I'll start us out. Okay. I feel like I want to couch the conversation, at least start it off this way. I mean, because we'll probably get into some weird, wild, woolly and woo-woo territory, which I'm excited about. I love that stuff. But to me, I think it's important to be honest about what this search has been couched in for me. Has been there are these little like kind of these little awakenings, these little secrets you kind of get or something like you these experiences that you all of a sudden become aware of, and they've been there the whole time. You just kind of were unconscious about them.
Yep.
Right. Just things like experience of energy in the body, stuff like this. And each time I find that one of the big pieces of my learning in this has been, for a while I thought those things were like steps towards some great outcome, right? Mm-hmm. And I would get very excited and clingy about that outcome.
Did you have like preconceived notions about what that outcome might look like? Like what
totally.
Kind of things?
Totally. So that's exactly the error I learned though, is that any of those.
Yeah.
Right? Any of those. This is how the mind works. This is how attachment works. This is how clinging and being fearful and being too over zealously needing some certain outcome. This is how that works. And when we get into those situations of it's like, I need my life to feel like this. I need my life to look like this. I need that kind of outcome or this kind of outcome. I need to be this kind of person. What I've learned about myself is all of those needs do not come from the pleasure of living in that stuff. They come from the fear of not having it.
Yes.
The need, the desire, I think, always originates in the shadow, not in the light, so to speak. I want to get into, my experience of energy in the body, my experience of the mind looking at itself. And I've also gone through like a more recent experience that I don't think you and I have talked about yet, Susanna. That was like a big sort of like a bomb went off in my experience in a good way.
Oh my God.
I've been sort of trying to put the pieces together from,
So take us back though. Take us back to what started all of this. How did you even start exploring this stuff?
So to me, first of all, this the, like if you wanted to see like the tiniest little seedlings of this, you'd go back to high school and college where I was a very devout evangelical Christian. And I wasn't raised in it at all. So I came to this in high school at a church that had they got together on Wednesday nights for a youth group. Mm-hmm. And there was girls there and they played rock and roll. You know what I mean? And I had a bunch of cool friends there, basically.
Yeah.
I went over to my buddy's house in junior high to smoke weed. And I didn't smoke very much weed back then. I didn't really get to do it very often because it was so hard to get out of the house and try it. But I got to go to my friend's house to smoke weed. He's like, if you're going to come over here, I would want to spend the night because I don't want to be stoned at all in front of my parents in junior high. Right. And he's like, well, if you do that, then you gotta come to church with us in the morning. And I'm like, that's fine. Sounds fun. I've never been to a church before. You know what I mean? I had literally never been to a church before. Wow. Right. So that was the first time I went to that church. And after a while, I kind of made it my home. I had some mentors there, some close friends there. And it was the beginning of this sort of a growing, just the budding bits of a mystic spirituality, mm-hmm. just the budding bits. And so because I didn't have a big, you know, a crystal cathedral in my head about that particular religion, like the practice of it for me was very organic and it was very natural. And it remained that even when I went to college and was trained as a religious studies major, basically becoming a religious scholar. And I loved it. I fell in love with it. So I was really devout for a long time. But within that tradition, as I grew up, and got older, I found the Christian contemplatives. I found the Henry Nouwens and the Thomas Mertons, the Brennan Mannings, the Teresa of Avila's, the mystics throughout time, the contemplatives from the Christian path. Mm-hmm. And these people became that's clearly who I was resonating with. But at the same time, I was doing all the churchy stuff. I was starting up churches. I was a worship leader. I was in all sorts of wild and woolly stuff, and it was a blast. But eventually that all came to an end about 10 years ago for my wife and I both. We kind of both just stepped away, and I'll just leave it at that. I think there's a lot more to mine there because I really love that. I really love that crew, that evangelical background. My favorite people in the whole world are people who used to be evangelical.
Oh, that's still interesting. That's a very interesting statement.
my favorite people in the world, just because it's like we both have the same kind of PTSD and the same kind of loyalty and the same kind of we needed to leave the house, you know, but like we always have fond memory of the home we came from. Right. So anyways, that's where the early days starts of it were. And then I had about like 5 years, about maybe 5-6 years of just like, yeah, I'm just an existential nihilist. You know, I don't need to believe in anything. I'm very strong in my heart and in my mind. And really, we don't have either of those. It's just a will. That's it. That's all we are. And I was just very like, I was just like hardcore. I was like, most people don't know how to just accept the facts that they don't matter, you know? I was kind of owning that, but I was also kind of mostly unconscious about it all. My son was being born and we were raising him and our marriage was on the rocks just because like that was just so much going on. My career was, I didn't know what I was doing, right? It was like a lot of stuff was going on. I was young. I was 30, I was 28, 29, something like that, maybe even younger. And so it was mostly that season. And then I started listening to I've always listened to podcasts, and one of them was always Marc Maron, who interviews comedians. I love comedy. I love comedians and hearing their backstory. These feel like the warriors of our day and age, philosophically. And one of them that I started listening to was the Pete Holmes podcast called You Made It Weird. And Pete Holmes, another comedian, he's really into Ram Dass, like really into Ram Dass. Also similar post, like, you know, ex-evangelical. Who got divorced early on after being married and then left the church and started exploring more spirituality stuff. Whereas I had given up. I had felt like I had figured it all out, so to speak.
Interesting.
And as he talked about Ram Dass more and more, finally, after about a year or two of listening to him occasionally mentioning Ram Dass, as he's talking to these great comedians about, you know, just comedy and creative process and what matters and what doesn't in life, I just finally was like, okay, he's always recommending this Experiments in Truth audiobook. I'm going to try it out. It turned out it was about 10 or 11 lectures of Ram Dass, Richard Alpert, who now I've become like a total fucking total fanboy of. I think he's one of the best. I think he's really one of the best. Mm-hmm. And listening to that Experiments in Truth really started to soften my heart up. Like really started to bring back like just barely on the outside, started bringing back some feelings that I just hadn't had in a very long time. Just like soft, open, like open-hearted kind of feelings.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
just like, oh, this is kind of nice. What's this? Right. A little bit of maybe might get a little weepy. Don't really know why. I was, and it'd been a long time since I had felt sort of, there was a bit of wonder in the world. There was that was really instrumental for me, is just opening up that can of worms.
Yeah.
The other thing that was really instrumental is somehow I met this lady named Jess Lively. She there were some friends that she was in Portland, so we met her. I think we did an interview with her for Fizzle. We did a founder story with her, and she's been fooling around with a lot of like what has been in the bucket for me of like new agey, weirdo positivity type of stuff, right? And a lot of Eckhart Tolle, a lot of Abraham Hicks, a lot of that kind of stuff. And I didn't know anything about any of those, really. And through her, I started kind of fiddling with some. We kept in touch because we really connected a lot. And she had me watching these just like Abraham Hicks just on YouTube. There's just so much of this teacher, Abraham Hicks.
Ton, yes.
On YouTube. And it's weird. You got to deal with all of this, with the fact that this is channeled. And I just still to this day, I just don't think about that because I'm just testing the words by like what it's like going in and what my experience is. Mm-hmm. And I'm like kind of like, yep, nope, that's dope. That's good stuff. I like that. I like that. I don't like I don't like what isn't said more often from Abraham Hicks, to be honest. I wish there was more of a conversation about how to do this wisely. But at the same time, I haven't taken in everything from Abraham Hicks, just the Law of Attraction audiobook and then a ton of the YouTube video stuff. Mm-hmm. Because what I noticed was there was one conversation in particular. There was one conversation. And, you know, I'm just going to be upfront with occasionally in Portland, there it's legal to have cannabis in Portland.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can go into a store, you can get like a little cannabis cookie or something. You could get like a rolled cigarette that has cannabis in it. You could just walk it. You can get the vape pens. It's amazing. And it's totally legal. Right. So occasionally there'll be like some of these like cookies around from a party or something like that. Well, one day I had eaten a cookie that I didn't know was a pot cookie. Okay? And it turned
That's
out
That's always the beginning of a good story.
It was. And I know how to hold my own with substances like that. And so actually cannabis, I have to be honest and confess that cannabis has actually been really important for me.
Uh-huh.
It's really mellowed my mind and been a part of me looking at how I hate to use the word uptight because it's so cliche and stereotypical in this conversation. It's like, man, you know what? It'll teach you how uptight you really are. But it really like I can't speak highly enough. Now I have a very like sort of almost like a strict relationship with any sort of drug or alcohol like that, because I noticed that like you can just develop these dependencies on and there's a back end to it. When your mind is most of the time on a substance like that, even though it's led to such great breakthroughs for me, it still makes me weaker. I notice that, like, you know, I find that I'll need to like control what I can have more often. And that's just not how I want to be living. I want to be able to do this stone cold sober anytime, any place. Right.
Yeah.
So, anyways, I had one of these cookies. I didn't know was a cannabis cookie. And, it was like 2 or 3 in the afternoon. It was one of those, like, let's get through the afternoon, get a little sugar, get a little bite of something in.
Yep.
And then my friend Jess Lively called and it started kind of kicking in a little bit through the call. And I was just having a blast with her because the pot was kicking in. But we were talking about some really great stuff. And she helped me learn something about myself. She would basically could be summarized as my Christian sort of framework. I was like it's like you're addicted to suffering. It's like you're addicted to struggling. It's like you need it to hurt. And she said, what I've realized is I don't want it to hurt. I don't want it to take any discipline. I'm admitting to myself, I just want this to be easy. And I'm not saying that I wouldn't be like that doesn't mean I'm not going to do all the work that's necessary. But I'm admitting to myself, I'm coming back into that really, really little girl in my heart that's just wanting it to be easy and not understanding why it would be hard, right?
Yeah.
This really pointed out a lot to me because are you very familiar with the Enneagram? Have you gotten into that very much, Susanna?
Only barely, actually.
I really like the Enneagram as a personality type test because it will just tell you what your darkness is. It really is like, whereas the StrengthsFinders is like, oh, you're good at sending email. This is nice. You're a connector. Oh, a maven? Lucky you. You know? The Enneagram is like, you are deathly afraid of being insignificant. Or you do everything in your life because you're afraid that you're not worthy. Or you do everything in your life because you're afraid of someone else controlling you or being under the control of somebody else. Like that's Donald Trump, an eight. And both my parents were eights, right? So this was the world I grew up in, which it's all – an eight is all about independence. They're all about being able to take care of yourself. They're all about this kind of stuff. And I was as a four on the Enneagram, like just the sensitive, sad, melodramatic – fear, like just wanting, like never feeling like I had it good at some point, and now the paradise has been lost. But I love feeling feelings. So, anyways, I was a sensitive kid, but I grew up in a very like sort of rigorous, independent environment. Lots of support, lots of love and support, but like that was the thing that I sort of brought into my relationship with what I'll call God. I don't believe in God. In the same sense that most of us would use that word, you know, I think we all have to kind of categorize that now when we get past these sort of essential religions. But this is, by the way, the background of the Enneagram is this spiritual tradition. Kind of looks like it has some Kabbalistic Sufi background stuff, but it was really developed in early Christian stuff about the question of you keep trying to get to God, but you keep running into yourself. Right. Yeah. And that is the summary of this entire sort of like getting into this, how I got into this search at all.
Okay.
As I'm looking for God.
Yeah.
I'm looking for transcendence. Yeah. I'm looking for depth, being at home, for oneness, for love, for that transcendent sort of love feeling that I've tasted. I almost wish I hadn't tasted. And even if I didn't taste it, I was still searching for it. That incompleteness almost, right? It's the complete of the incompleteness, right? I don't know. The completion of the incompleteness. And so for me, this has been principally a psychological, you know, for the most of it, it's been a psychological search. It's been self-actualization. It's been trying to find out who I am and what I'm here for. I really, really resonate these days. And I think the whole kit and caboodle might be summarized in this idea of becoming your authentic self. Right. But there's this other thing that's overlaying on top of that, which is this kind of like this sort of energetic experience that is developed in the context of this search. And the first time I really noticed it was probably in that conversation with Jess Lively.
Really?
The way that I did there. If I'm honest with myself, it was there before then and after then, and a lot of like getting high by myself, like was a lot of like I would do that. I would take cannabis by myself and I would meditate. And because I was like, whoa, this is interesting, just a little bit before putting on some funny movie and getting into some Doritos, of course. but the experience of have you known, how do you explain this? The way that positive mental posture, okay, working with gratitude and affirmation, mm-hmm. right? Thinking of Abraham Hicks, getting up on that high-flying disc,
yep.
right? You know how that is an experience in sort of your sense of your body?
Yes, I do.
It's like you literally can kind of sense vibratory, the frequency's higher. It's more intense. It's more not intense, but it's just more carbonated, as I think about it sometimes. It's mm-hmm. my body's carbonated yeah. a little bit, right?
Yeah.
Is that how you're saying it?
Well, sort of. I do this in the morning when I'm driving to work. I try and put on some sort of soft ambient music that just softens my heart and just, you know, because I don't really enjoy work very much. And so I need something to help me get into that positive frame of mind. And what happens is the music resonates in and through me. And as soon as I feel my heart blossom open, you know, then it just flows. It flows throughout the rest of my body. But
yeah,
it seems to be very you know, the heart is a key to the experience for me.
Yeah. And I just that feeling of when you, I'm curious when you feel that in your heart, I mean, is it that like almost, like how do you explain just the physical sensation of that? Not even the emotional, the thing that comes up, but just the physical sensation.
Yeah, no, it's not an emotional thing, actually. It is a physical feeling in my heart. It feels like, oh gosh, it's so hard to describe because I guess
it's
is
really
kind
hard,
of, now that I think about it, it's kind of an amalgam between physical vibration, which is a very, very quick, buzzy sort of vibration, and just almost painful joy.
Yeah.
You know, that joy that just makes you want to cry because it's so beautiful.
Totally. Yeah. And for me, the joy doesn't get that pain, that intense sometimes. And I think in some ways I'm sort of governing that. I'm sort of bringing that down because one of the things I've noticed is I have this concept called slow energy. What I notice is I have to do the work to get myself up, right? To bring my energy up, right? But because my baseline is too low. It's just like, it's sad. It's depressed. It's negative, right? I can just live there as much as I want to. I think we all can. We can all do that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So there's a little bit of discipline of just like, you know, healthy nutrition and nourishment to get our bodies in a certain place. Same thing with our soul, with whatever is the thing that's our feeler inside there. And so I bring that up, but I notice that if I bring it up too high, what I notice is it doesn't have as much of an impact on my environment, on the world around me.
What do you mean?
So like I have this concept of slow energy, which is like bringing it up to a vibrational sort of frequency. And that's putting too high. That's just using someone else's terms, you know, vibrational frequency or whatever. But I bring myself up to a level of positivity that's still grounded, mm-hmm. right? I don't lose my connection to the ground. And for me, that's a really – that like just for me personally, that I can get myself up off the ground, right? I can get myself so excited and so hopeful and so future-oriented and so positive that like I'm just not on the ground. And that's one of the big things that I've just had to learn. That's what I – like sort of one of the massive lessons is I can kind of unground myself. But what I've learned, especially through that other experience we'll get into here in a bit, that like that there is a connection to the ground that's essential for me.
Uh-huh.
And that when we do have what my sort of intuition says is, and I haven't, so I don't have this proven yet, Not that any of this shit will get proven in any way, shape, or form for fucking hundreds of years or something like that. You know what I mean? Like, we're all just, like, literally, like, blowing on craps, like dice just go, like, I think it's something like this.
Yeah,
I
think so, exactly. You know,
it's like, I feel like it's good. We do well to remind ourselves that we have no idea what we're messing with.
Yeah.
Right? I heard somebody said, this was really cool. I heard somebody say, look at your hand. Okay, so Susanna, look at this. Everybody listening, like if you can, look at your hand right now. He says, we've all been counting our fingers wrong. We go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, right? One for each digit. And the thumb is sort of a different thing, but we include it in the thing. He says, you know, no, like, first of all, see the palm that holds everything together, the thing that unifies all of these parts. We should be counting that as well, first of all. And then second of all, we should turn our hand over and do another count for the entire thing. Look at the back of your hand. It doesn't have the same amount of, like, sort of separation between all the digits and the knuckles and stuff like that. It's more sort of visually an entire whole, at least mine is, right? So you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 digits, the center of your palm that draws them all together, and then the back, which represents the whole thing. This is, you can see how it gets a little more like it represents the whole. It represents the thing that pulls them all together. And then he says, oh, look at this. This is an interesting thing. Hey, how many limbs do you have? Well, I have 4 limbs. Oh, wow. What if those are like a symbol of, what if like the 4 fingers are almost like a symbol of your 4 limbs? Well, cool, but we've got that thumb there. Well, it's almost like your head is the thinker, right? So the thumb is kind of like the thinker, like it's this other digit. It's this special kind of thing that's used there. So you've got 4 limbs and a head or a thinker represented on your hand. And then look at where else your hand has. What's important, maybe most important about your hand, is the wrist. The fact that it's connected to a much greater body that is actually sending it all of the impulses and signals on what to do, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And so this guy's like, so you've got the 4 limbs and the thinker just like your hand does. I wonder what your wrist is.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I love that metaphor. I just really like found that to be like, that's what my experience feels like. It feels like I've just become aware of in the last, you know, 4 or 5 years or 2 years really of, yeah, there's probably a wrist there. And how could there not be in some ways? Mm-hmm. And like, I have no idea. And I don't think we're going to get the kind of, I think what our insights about the wrist are similar to the insights we could get from a mushrooms or LSD trip or something like that. It's something that we are going to see, as you know, the Apostle Paul says, through a glass darkly, by nature of the fact of how we see, what could a hand possibly comprehend about my body? Mm-hmm. You know, what could my thumb possibly comprehend about the rest of its body? So part of me is, first of all, just loving that metaphor. I'm just like literally just kind of tripping out on that metaphor, but in a very experiential and sort of metaphysical sense, being like, no, I know that, like, for instance, my business partner or my friends, several of them would go like, dude, you're so fucking loony. You're such a weirdo. And I'm like, yeah, but I'm like, yeah, I know, but this is like, admit it. We have no idea what we're doing here. We have no idea how we got here.
Yes, but
we have no
idea
what this is about.
I mean, what if, okay, so you, keeping with your metaphor, what if your thumb knows everything about your body because it's so obviously connected through the wrist? What if it is that obvious for us, but we have, by some means, decided to completely ignore the wrist and the connection to the body?
Well, my sense there is that when the thumb is being the best thumb it can be, it's just doing what it naturally does. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't know in the way that we mean know, in the way that we want to know, in the way that we're the most fascinating beast because we've learned how to know in this special way. Mm-hmm. But like Alan Watts has said, like, he's just like, maybe this whole civilization thing is a bit of a mistake. We shouldn't have really gone off this far in the reservation, as it were. Yes. Right? It's this idea of like, wow, we can know, we can build, we can do. And in the and we've really, I think that's why it's interesting. It's cool to me. It's very interesting and almost like moving to me that so many things in popular culture, really, you can see as these symbols or metaphors of our species trying to get back to some form of being like what we naturally are, mm-hmm. were rather, right? And the damage is done. Like, we are a fundamentally technological civilization. Like, we make things. We think, we learn, we know. And it's like, we have tasted and seen of that. And it's like, nope, that is, we're not going back. Mm-hmm. We can, though, we can do a much better job, my hunch is, of balancing that and of learning the kinds of things that I think psychedelics can teach us, for example. Like, if you take a trip like that, like, and I haven't yet to do psychedelics, you will see with your eyes what you are made of, mm-hmm. basically. Mm-hmm. And it causes if you don't know your own mind, if you're not an experienced meditator, who knows what you end up experiencing. But if you're a really experienced meditator and you have a lot of dexterity with your awareness, what you can do in that situation, what you can discover is simply is, I think, probably the sensation of realizing you are just a thumb. I think that's the greatest we can know, to be honest. That's why I think mystery will always, for me, will always be a fundamental part of whatever's going on, is what my hunch is. Mm. Mystery will be prerequisite.
I'm not sure I agree.
Yeah.
But that's okay.
Well, I think I love that, but and I'm only arguing from my experience thus far. Like, yeah. Right now, for example, like I haven't never read Ram Dass's his Be Here Now, right? One of the best selling things of all time ever, and the thing that kind of is this catalyzing piece of media for this whole entire explosion of thinking about this kind of stuff, mm-hmm. back from the '60s, and I've got it and I've had it for a while, but I've just thumbed through. There's the first part of the book, which is all these like weird graphic designy pamphlety things. But there's this other part in the back that's like very small. It's just called The Cookbook. And I'm just realizing, oh, damn, this is really good. So I'm slowly going through it because he's talking about so much that I've experienced now in meditation and using asanas and for getting more awareness of your body's energy and all this kind of shit. And now I'm realizing what I know fundamentally and truly is that there's so much that I don't know. Yeah. But I've also like done, I've traveled really widely in terms of who I've been reading. And I'm realizing, oh, dude, nobody who I respect really admits they know what the thing is. Mm-hmm. They're all like, look, this is some crazy stuff that your body can do. This is some crazy stuff your mind can do. And I think it's really, really, really healthy. Mm-hmm. I think we need to be doing this, yeah. and that we're getting out of alignment when we don't do this. But all in all, that's what we know. And I'm definitely from what I would call almost an emergent tradition of a post-religious, almost post-spiritual, sect of people who are realizing that, oh, the mystic experience is just an experience like anything else. It's very much like an orgasm, right? Mm-hmm. You cannot really explain what you can explain a lot. When you explain what an orgasm is, you will completely miss the point. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You will never read about an orgasm and go like, oh yeah, I think I know what you're talking about now. unless you're comparing that to your own experience of that very same thing.
Right.
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 And so how do you explain how we get to do that? I don't think we'll have the explanation for it. I think we'll have like, dude, who knows how we got to be able to do this? Who knows what this whole thing is. So I'm profoundly like evolutionary biology oriented in terms of my understanding of like how we got here and what this is. I mean, this is just the energy body is just nature doing its thing is what my sort of modus operandi is.
Okay.
It's like, it's an experiment that nature's running and to see what molecules need to do in order to survive longer and longer and longer or something like that. Right. Mm-hmm. And so it's something we've known how to do. We've been because it's been a part of our DNA, and either we're turning it up maybe, or maybe we're turning it down, or maybe it's just always been there like a secret underneath it. But I don't necessarily see angels and demons in this. I don't see necessarily, you know, a benevolent universe in this, though I do think it is. I want to stop the philosophical conversation and get back into my story here, because I feel like I'm losing myself now. But I do feel like what I've noticed in my story is you can choose to be as fearful as you want, and you can choose to be as positive as you want.
Yeah.
And what we're all doing is kind of we're negotiating and navigating our environment. Right. So for me, it's my marriage. It's my son, my baby daughter, my business partner, my customers, my family, my dad, my relationship with my dad, my relationship with my friends, the things that I'm interested in that I find naturally, like I'm just interested in this kind of stuff, and the things that I used to feel interested in that I just don't anymore. Mm-hmm. Right. So I'm navigating all of this, and I'm trying, you know, my relationships are my barometer for how I'm doing.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Like what I bet for you, one of your biggest barometers is your relationship with your kids,
yeah.
Right? Like if you screw that up, if your connection to the wrist, using our metaphor again, takes you in places that are I think you would never allow – you are just really not prone to let yourself go to places that are unsafe for those relationships.
Yeah.
And I feel that. I feel that as well. Even sometimes when I feel like an invitation or a calling towards – getting more crazy, to put a different term on it, but getting more interested, going deeper, going further. To me, I'm using this stuff to kind of keep to make my life feel like it's not a waste of time. Okay. Do you know what I mean? Like I love everything that's going. I want to make my relationship with my son as loving and good as it possibly can be.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm kind of using it for that. But if I'm honest, like I kind of wish like I'm sad to admit this, but like what my stupid petulant mind thinks, I think is like, I really kind of wish I was in a cabin or a cave with an apple and a jug of milk. And no future, just living right there and figuring out going at, like seeing what happens.
Yeah.
You know, part of me really feels that like that desire for that, that just getting out there into the mystic, like getting lit, like eschewing everything and going out there for a few years and just seeing what it's like.
Yeah.
Because
total
immersion, man. And it's like so hard not to do that on one hand. On the other hand, I'm like the luckiest guy in the world because like my son's amazing. My daughter's such a joy. My wife is beautiful and such a like a she loves me so well, and she makes me laugh.
Yeah.
Right. And like I love all the things I get to do. So I think though underneath that, it's like, no, listen, turn off all the lights and let's just kind of starve for a while and let's see what we see. When we don't open our eyes.
Okay, you got to take us back into the story. Okay, so we're back with Jess Lively, and I want to know what you felt during that conversation made you think, you know, something's happening here.
What I felt was exactly that same experience you were talking about in your chest, the sensation of – and now I didn't really notice it at the time. And also because I had a pot cookie, I didn't trust much of what my body was experiencing. You know, mm-hmm. when I get stoned, like you can – it turns up this experience of energy, but you can have it immediately. It makes it effortless, mm-hmm. right? It makes it totally effortless. And for that reason, it's nice because you can notice it, but it's like what did Ram Dass say about this stuff? He was like, it shows you what it's like, but it doesn't make you become it.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? And so you can, I felt the vibrational body experience that I associate with those feelings of joy, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Potential opportunity, the emotional side. See, I think that in my experience, I can feel the body stuff as it is. Sometimes it's just there, and I just tune into that. But I find that it's a little more beneficial for me when I'm actively sort of channeling my mind towards certain thoughts or emotions.
Mm-hmm.
to make the, because that the way that the body interacts with that, the way that subtle energy interacts with that, I notice a lot. I notice like that it changes things. It makes it a richer, fuller experience. And that's what I'm kind of becoming a connoisseur of, I guess, or an enthusiast about. So to finish the Jess Lively story, like that was just the beginning of a season of basically being like I think that began like 3 weeks of my first going like, oh shit, like this is dope. This is amazing. I like life is full of possibility and potential. I am a creator of my life. I can shape my life however I want it to be. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to do that through gratitude and joy instead of through fear and depression and suffering. You know what I mean? So it was a very wild swing to the other side. And then that started, you know, about probably 12 months of me navigating that stuff and realizing like, oh my gosh, I can swing too far out. Cause then when that leaves, when, you know, like, so the Abraham Hicks people talk about this as like alignment, when that leaves, you don't know how to get it back necessarily. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And it can feel devastating. You feel like you've done something wrong.
Right.
So I had to go through like probably 6 swings like that. And each time the swing got less intense. And I don't know how else to make clear to listeners like just what that was like. I mean, it just basically felt like I was tapped in and I knew who I was. Mm-hmm. And I noticed that because of how it felt in my body and in my soul, in my thing that's like in the thing that would go like, yeah, it feels good to be alive, right? Just like whatever thing in me that would know that it does feel good to be alive.
Yeah.
In that thing, I felt good. Now, at this point, I wasn't resonating. I didn't know. I wasn't paying a lot of attention to the body stuff quite, right? It was there, but it was mostly just like, whoa, this is kind of crazy. Then I started messing around with pretty serious meditation, mm-hmm. hour-long meditation, hour-long a day, using an app called Cutting Machinery. This guy, Vinay Gupta, made it, and he's like, yeah, so enlightenment's about a PhD's worth of work, and anybody can achieve it if you just work. So it's like an hour meditation in 10-minute chunks, okay? So 10 minutes of mantra meditation where you're focusing your mind on a single point, you know, of like this word. Mm-hmm. You're trying not – I'm basically trying not to get into that whole body experience of whole body awareness. That's the first 10 minutes. Second 10 minutes is that whole body awareness where every sensation of your body, everything you hear, everything you taste, everything you smell, everything you see, everything you feel – mostly for me, my eyes are closed and I'm not hearing much. I'm just receiving that perception of the entire body, that whole subtle energy body, that whole thing is the thing I'm kind of addicted to. It just feels the best. Mm-hmm. So that's the second part. And then the third part is emotional awareness, where you try to use your emotions as the mantra, so to speak. And particularly he talks about kind of looking for negative emotion and finding negative emotion and then just sitting with it, like mm-hmm. kind of holding it with open hands and yeah. just holding it, just feeling it. So, with this meditation practice, this was when things started kicking up into high gear, because it was a very big difference from meditating 15, 20 minutes every other day and meditating an hour a day. Like mm-hmm. that was like, whoa. And the app made it like, so it's like, try to string as many days together as you possibly can. Uh-huh. So I was sort of incentivized. But mostly I was just really motivated. I wanted to do that stuff, because at this time I was noticing that law of attraction, Abraham Hicks, positivity. I don't like to say just a positivity thing, but just like working with the gratitude, getting that high flying disc sort of thing. I noticed that has this like dark side if you're not wise about it. And I wasn't wise about it yet. Right. Mm-hmm. I would fall off and then I'd get more depressed. And so I needed to make the highs less high and the lows less low, to get back to sort of a baseline, knowing what I knew now. Anyways, so tell me if I'm just rambling at this point, because I just love the environment you have here for me talking. I can't tell if any of this is usable for you. Do you want to ask me a question to get me back on point?
I'm really wanting to see the trajectory of how you found your way from, you know, the law of attraction, gratitude, appreciation, you know, raising your vibrational field to experiencing sexual energy and what you've done with that and how you've explored that. But it sounds like you're getting there through
I'm getting there slowly.
Through meditation.
I feel like it's really important for my story. It has been so important, all these little different steps and all these little different insights. I'm like piecing together this puzzle is what I feel like. And my intuition, like, well, I have two minds about this, right? One of them is like, oh my God, we're going to complete the puzzle soon. You know what I mean? And we're going to be God or something like that. We're going to, like, finally, we're never going to have to worry about anything again. Right. That's what the one hand is that. And the other hand, it's like, and I actively believe this one more, right? I have a discipline of believing this one more. I want to believe this one more. It's like, dude, the puzzle never ends.
Yeah.
You know that.
Yeah.
The puzzle never ends. Like,
yeah,
enjoy.
That's definitely my slant, which is more, it's ever expanding. No matter what you define it as now, it's going to create itself into something else. And I'm just so, like, excited to remain open to just show me, you know?
Yeah.
Show
totally.
Me what's next. Show me something.
Yeah, and for me, like, it has been important to realize, like, how important to me my wife and my kid are, how important to me my relationship with Corbett, my business partner, is. Mm-hmm. How important to me, like the consistency of those relationships. And there are other relationships that I've sort of pruned off over time, right? Because it's like, oh no, these aren't essential. Mm-hmm. These aren't essential. I'm kind of whittling down to, like, again, that idea or that metaphor of the authentic self.
Yeah.
Like the thing that I like, no, I want to bloom, right? And I'm finding that, like, it's all there already. And what I'm really learning to do is perceive what's always been there and appreciate what's always been there. And I think gratitude appreciation is sort of kind of like the secret thing that unlocks the whole damn thing.
Yes. You know, it's like, well, there's a lot of people who say that.
Getting back to my story now.
Yes,
okay.
Back to your story.
So meditation has played a big role in that. Now I've gone off of – I'm not so religious with an hour a day, though today I did much more than an hour because it was just like it was on, right? So for me, the body, the experience of the body, the experience of energy in the body has been essential to quieting my mind. Has been essential to those moments where I'm watching and looking at my mind. I have to go into just – being itself, awareness itself looks like riding my nervous system.
Okay.
That's the best. That's like when I think of the subtle energy body or whatever, all this stuff, I think of my mind just like riding my nervous system. So the body stuff became really important in the meditation because it made the meditation really fun.
Okay.
It made it really interesting and really fun. And then, okay, then now we're getting to the big turning point in the story. I probably camped out in that just like meditating, noticing things in the body for 8 months, 6 months, 12 months, something like this, maybe longer, because the Abraham Hicks, the journaling, which, by the way, now there's a course on that journaling thing at fizzle.co/journal. Pretty proud of that. That's that feels good. So but I camped out there for probably a year or maybe more, something, some with little tiny gains along the way.
Mm-hmm.
Then. Okay, now I have an embarrassing story to tell, all right? Another one of those stories where you get a substance you didn't know you were getting. It was at a party. Have you heard of this drug Molly or MDMA?
I've never heard of it referred to as Molly.
Molly's what the kids call it. Okay. Molly's what the kids call it, and it's like a party drug. They use it as a party drug. Well, I've learned it's way better as a consciousness exploration drug than that, because I basically was given some without fully knowing it, and the night took a kind of a crazy turn. So I had been doing all of this meditation stuff. And I was at this, like, party in the woods, like, dance party. Like, it was like we were going to do a dance party. But it was like kind of a rural environment. Not like – it was just right outside of town. But it was – there was a lot of trees, a lot of nature, and a little pond and stuff like that. And what happened was, like, I just was, like, so good from the meditation at paying attention to that body feeling thing.
Right.
And paying attention to the experience of the body and that subtle energy. It's very much like a heart drug, is what I've learned. You love everybody. I loved everybody that night, but I mostly kept to myself. I went out in the trees and just kind of like sat in the like grass and just kind of made love to God, basically, is what I put it. Cause I just sat there and I meditated. So I was like, whoa, this is so much in my experience right now. I have to close my eyes. I have to meditate. I have to get in my old position. And I just watched what was going on. And then over the course of the night, what I think happened is I basically like got access. This sounds so stupid to any of my friends who ever hear this, but I don't care. But I basically think I, for the first time, got access to like my root chakra, uh-huh. Right? That bottom one.
Yep.
That bottom thing. And it was like pure, raw sexual pleasure. That didn't have an erection associated with it. It was electric through the body.
Yeah.
And so I was kind of like pinned to the ground, just experiencing that, just going, and I could turn it off. I could come out of it a bit. I couldn't turn it off all the way, but like when I went all the way into it with my like awareness, mm-hmm. It really expanded and like it became my whole experience. And it was wild. It was bliss. It was wonderful. It was really, really terrific. But at the same time, the whole time my mind's out there going like, this is on a substance. This is, what is this? This is interesting. This is something in my body that's kind of always there, but I'm experiencing a really heightened version of it, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm.
Did you feel it move up through the other chakras or did it stay?
I did not. I've had the months after that, the month after that, a lot of symptoms that like look like a Kundalini energy awakening. Mm-hmm. I think that's what it effectively was because it persisted, not as intense, but I could get into that even still today in light ways, very similar things. I mean, before this call, like I work lying down on the bed a lot because every once in a while I could just take a break and I can just kind of like turn it on and it feels so good.
Yeah.
Right. But after that, there was a lot of like energy, like it was like a couple days after that, it was weird. The sexuality of it, the way that, that it was like this intense, fierce, powerful. That was definitely a new experience for me, but also then just the sexuality of it, like with my wife, who's so lovely, and she just does not, she's like not interested in this cosmonauty weird stuff that I'm into. And she's like, I had to just confess, like, listen, this is what's going on. In the days afterwards, like because there was a lot of electricity in my body. I didn't sleep a few nights, mm-hmm. right? I was just up like all night, just feeling that meditative thing, and I was fine with it. But like I had one teacher or kind of mentor who was just like, dude, you need to make sure that you sleep. Mm-hmm. It is like a Kundalini meltdown will set you back years. Mm-hmm. You know, if you allow this stuff kind of, so that's where his advice to me, and I took this, his advice to me was to bring it down. He's all, eat meat, spend time in large bodies of water, watch daytime television, don't meditate, quit all of the spiritual practice stuff. Just bring yourself back down to baseline because that's where the work really happens. And I'm glad I took that advice because I was actually quite scared. It was very intense and very electric for probably 2 weeks as it started to taper off and it kept staying around kind of unwanted in some sense, like after that as well. Cause you know, you can read on the internet, you're like, what I basically sense is there's a bunch of people on the internet who talk about a Kundalini energy awakening and they're like, it kind of ruined like a year of my life. Mm-hmm. Like I didn't have control over my body. I remember a story that I heard on your podcast here of the lady who was just like, hey, you would be with a client and you'd just be having an orgasm. You'd have to try to deal with it, you know?
Yeah.
And I never sat there and just had the orgasm, meaning I never ejaculated.
Yeah.
To put a fine point on it.
Right.
But like it was all that was that same exact
ecstatic,
orgasmic energy, uh-huh. you know? Yeah. That feeling. And so, that was my big thing. And now since then, what I've noticed is there's a lot more stuff in the system. There's a lot more. So if I sit down at any given time, at any given moment, and just kind of look for what's in the body, it's normally hiding there somewhere, and then I can kind of bring it out, and we can build it up over time, either using just pure awareness, just watching where it goes, or gratitude, or what I've noticed is that, like, Qigong, mm-hmm. or like Tai Chi type stuff, using that breathing movement and just visualizing the energy to that. So that can be really, really, that can feel great. That can feel so good. I don't know if it has any positive benefit on the other side at all, but it's nice. It really feels like it kind of combs through and cleans all that energy in the body. It's nice. It's good stuff. So what I've noticed is this. I noticed that I believe my experience in the body a lot more. Like I don't know if it was just like this before and I just like was more skeptic about it, or if there's actually more in the experience and I can't help but believe it. But
by
I think
before, are you referring to before the experience happened at all? Or are you talking about before when you were sort of in the heightened 2 weeks of like electrical explosion?
No, before the experience at all. Like, okay. I think it was always just very gentle and subtle in there. And like, if I work really hard, I might get like a little bit of interesting stuff going on in there. And I was like, oh yeah, this is fun. This is worth it. I think right now it's much more enjoyable, mm-hmm. like all the time, the experience, meditation specifically, yoga, meditation. I find that there's a lot of things that this energy is almost like asking me to do with my body, mm-hmm. right? It's like there's a lot of stretches that just feel like, ooh, that's nice. Yeah, let's do that. It's that kind of stuff, like a lot of that nervous system stretching in my arms and my shoulders. And I've laid off my hips because I kind of hurt them a bit because I was stretching too hard.
Oh, no.
So I do notice though, even amidst all of this, the thing that actually I'm wanting most to shift and change is my mind, and maybe my personality and my mind. I don't know if those are, I don't think they're quite the same thing, but I want my mind to shift. Because if my fears and my need to feel blissful, if I can need that less, right? If I can need to feel blissful less, because in some ways I can think of all of this spiritual searching as a, listen, you don't know, I fucking need to feel spirit. I need to feel bliss somehow. I need to feel something good, right? Because I just don't normally. Mm. And so what I'm most wanting to do, what all of this energy stuff is for me, is worthless unless it helps me just make more and more friends with the things I find in the shadows, right? Like Ram Dass says, like, I've been doing this for 40 years and I haven't gotten rid of a single neurosis, but I've gotten really used to having tea with them,
right?
You know,
right.
I've gotten used to having them over. And so for me, that is like, I want to make friends. The journey is still making friends with those neuroses, even though it's like, yeah, all this stuff's dope. One day we're going to figure out what we can do with this. You know, this is amazing. But at the same time, my experience is so isolated. It's really isolated. I'm the only one in my little crew. I'm the only, you know, it's like I get to like, so talking to you is like this little beautiful oasis in kind of a desert, you know?
Yeah.
So that's my big story. That's like, that's where I'm at like right now.
How have you, there's so many things we could explore deeper here. How have you, tried to incorporate this newfound energy into your sexual relationship with your wife? I mean, given that she's, you know, not actively interested in maybe some of the philosophical topics surrounding all of this. Nevertheless, you know, you're two human beings who are married and who have an intimate relationship. And so there must be some level of incorporating it. And what does that look like for you?
So when that experience was sort of going on, it was really interesting to like have sex and be like, first time this has ever happened to me where we would, and this is off, I mean, I guess I'm just opening the full kimono here, Susanna. But like immediately after sex, it's just like, let's do it again. I felt like I could have done it 100 times.
Yeah.
Like my body was just ready for that.
Have you experimented with keeping that going without ejaculating?
No, not necessarily. Like, to be honest, because the other thing, the big thing in my life sexually, Susanna, is the fact that my 6-month-old daughter sleeps in our room too.
Yeah. Okay. So you can't really.
We do not have very many times to explore at all. Yeah. Right.
Oh, I feel you. I've been there.
You know, so it hasn't worked itself in. I don't work with it that way. I do notice in my meditative practice, like there is a way that I can kind of get it up and hold it almost in that range. I also do notice it just like yoga and meditation. I'm working with it but it's pretty subtle. In terms of it's not subtle compared to what I used to experience in my body when I did those things, but it's subtle compared to what the act of lovemaking would be like. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, but at the same time, it's also more intense because it is just that feeling of like early orgasm that you can stretch for a while, right? But it feels good and it's kind of sexy. It can get sexy. What I notice is when that, like, when my awareness and I just kind of like focus on the energy where it goes. And sometimes if I let it go like straight out into my, you know, my basically my sex organ, for lack of a better term, geez Louise, getting hot in here. But when, you know, when you ride that energy and because you can kind of like, you've got the hard thing. I feel a lot in my sort of throat and neck these days. That's where a lot of like good, like that's where it feels like great to me right now, where the predominant experience is. But like I can also take that down into sort of that second chakra sexual experience, which is so intense. I mean, it's like that's definitely the most. And when you allow that to be, it's one of the most intense energy experiences. And that's why the orgasm works the way it does. I mean, I think that's the only reason why we're still fucking around. It's because we just can't help but get into that feeling of orgasm, you know?
Yeah.
We have to have it. I do notice that energy, that sexual energy, specifically in that sexual chakra, it almost feels like it comes out in front of the body for me. It's a very different quality than the others, than like that heart chakra, the throat, even that root chakra thing. One of the things that I noticed with the root chakra opening up is it felt like electric all through my legs, and especially the bottom of my feet. Mm-hmm. So now that's like the thing that I look at first in my experience, because it's normally the loudest. Is that bottom of the feet, and then from there it's like hands, top of the head, and everything starts filling in.
Yeah. Oh, it's so cool to hear you say that, because I definitely have the hands and feet thing going on. And I haven't ever heard anybody else describe that.
Yeah, and I don't know if I'm doing it right, Susanna. I have no.
Well, there is no doing it right.
If I'm doing it right, right? So, but I'm allowing myself. I'm just going like, hey, this is what it's like for me right now. Yeah. And because I feel pretty confident that like watching my mind in the meditative practice stuff and my relationships with like the people who I love, who I'm not in some weird ashram going off the deep ends. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm in Portland in a regular house, like with a regular family and like regular friends, you know? So it's like, and I'm a regular guy. That's the thing that I think I believe fundamentally is like, no, this is just something that anybody can do. And the benefits of it. This is something one of my teachers said, or the kind of a mentor guy. He's like, I'm not convinced that this is something we should be looking at. I mean, I got into it because I couldn't help it. And I think many of us get into it because we can't help it. Mm-hmm. But I'm not convinced that this necessarily leads us to a better future for humanity. Well, precisely because we don't really know what we're working with. It's like Oppenheimer being so interested in being able to split the atom that he doesn't even think about what it's going to be used for. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's an incredible discovery. It's an incredible discovery that's been there the whole time. The splitting the atom, the power that this unleashes for our species, for the Earth. But also the power this unleashes, right? So what this does, I think this spiritual energy, this spiritual exploration, there is in no way, shape, or form that is this isn't tethered to the good, This is just – this is pure, raw, unjust. It's like nature. There's no justice in nature to me. It's a very unjust place. And I think that – I think we should treat sexual energy, the spiritual energy, this stuff like nature. And so that means we have to bring our intelligence and our will to it. This gets close to what – there's actually – I've realized there's like – I don't know Aleister Crowley's work at all, but he has this term on magic. And he says that's what a magician does, is he plays with spiritual things with a will. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you can do it for bad and you can do it for good. Mm-hmm. But that's always been the case. That's why we have these like crazy rich shamanic tribes who are cannibalistic. You know what I mean? Because you can get what you want out of these experiences, what you and your psyche shapes it. And luckily, I think we live in a culture that's so predominantly. I mean, we're getting, I think we're quite emotionally aware, you know, all things considered. But like, so I think you draw, if there was a pill I could give someone that could make them experience everything that you or I or anybody else that you've had on the show has experienced, right? And they take the pill once and then they can literally with their mind to turn it on anytime they want, right? I think most by and large most of us will continue to use it for interesting exploration of who we are and of ourselves. Thank God that pill kind of doesn't exist, right? And that it is very difficult to do this. So only the people who really, really want it get it. And maybe a lot of us who really, really want it, the journey itself towards it is what's shaping us to be the kinds of people who use it in certain ways rather than other ways, I guess.
I don't know. Because
– And I totally understand, yeah.
My feeling is sort of that that this energy is just what we're made of. It's just – it's our other dimensional fingerprint. And, you know, so my – whatever my energy is and what I feel when I'm experiencing it is going to be unique to me and as yours is unique to you. And, you know, there's some similarities, but there's a vibrational fingerprint to it. But yeah. I feel like it – when you accept it, unconditionally, that it has a powerful healing effect. It can burn away so much of all of that shadow junk that we feel we have to figure out with our minds, you know?
Yeah. I will not argue with you on the healing sort of potentiality of this stuff.
I mean, right? I was in a very, very dark place too before all of this started, having just gone through divorce and, you know, I was turning 50 and I've got quite a few more years of therapy and issues and repeated issues than you're younger than I am. But it's this whole experience without trying to make it do anything to me, I am noticing – I mean, that it literally just does raise my vibration, and my set point is in a much more good feeling place most of the time.
I would resonate. We'll keep going. Sorry, I was interrupting you.
Well, that's okay. I mean, I think that if the effect of that has also then, you know, following the law of attraction principles has attracted to me, has sort of made my life coalesce into a form that is more pleasing as well. You know, I think they go hand in hand, but I don't worry about this energy in the same way. Maybe I'm just naive. I mean, it could very well be that I'm one of those, you know, la,
but
la,
I also,
la, la, la.
I also would say that I don't have, I say this, I say what I do about it, not because I worry about it very often or at all, really. I don't worry. I don't have worry about it. What I don't have, for instance, this energy being sort of our fingerprint, the thing on the other side, in the other dimension, basically, of what we really are. I've seen so much. I've heard so many anecdotal stories about that, and I like it. I like it. But at the same time, I haven't seen the data for myself enough yet, you know? Mm-hmm. So for me, that is why I'm still in process, I guess. And I'm brutally sort of honest with just what I have experience at this point. I'm also trying to stay intelligent and trying to stay in conversations with people who aren't necessarily like like everybody in my life. Just and I love these people, and they're smart, and they have hearts that feel, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. And so they kind of keep me honest, I guess, is one way of looking at it. Another way of looking at it is like, oh man, I could be literally levitating right now, Susanna. But what does that get me? I don't know what that gets me necessarily. So I don't know. I want to clarify that I don't have the worries. I don't have worries about it.
Okay.
And I'm not very serious about this because, to be honest, like, well, I gotta stay married and make sure I don't screw up my son, daughter, you know, and like, I want to make sure my business partner is happy, mm-hmm. and I want to have fun on the weekends occasionally, you know. But the thing is, this is the most fun thing I've found.
Yeah.
You know,
uh-huh.
this well, and, yes. and it's related specifically to those relationships when we get into really deep emotional conversations. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel that I get so turned up and turned on when I get into deep emotional conversations with people of just the truth, just of real truth, where we're admitting the things that we don't know to each other. That to me is like one of the highest feelings.
Yeah. I get that. Yeah. Or just what you're trying to understand, you know, I mean,
yeah.
It sounds like people like you, people like me just want to understand everything. Like, is that yeah. so much to ask? Or like, could I just please
totally.
Understand everything right now?
Totally. Yeah, totally.
So there's the sexual feeling that this energy has, but there's also that what I described that I sort of get into on my way to work is this energy. It's the same energy. It's just maybe filtered through a slightly different color or prism or something,
yeah.
so that it's just radiating out, you know, some other I'm having a hard time articulating any of this, but you know, if it's just like an infusion of a flavor, you know?
Yeah. 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 And I definitely perceive it as the same energy.
Yeah.
I do feel like when I, like one of the things that really happened to me and like the weeks after that party is it felt like my spine was a lot, like there was energy on the back of my body now,
mm-hmm.
not just the front. Like still more, most of the time, the front of my body feels like it has more. And I don't know what this means. I have no idea what this is about. So if anybody out there knows anything about this, please send me an email, chase@fizzle.co, and let me know. Because I definitely noticed the back, like the back. I didn't notice like anything kind of crawling up my spine. But I do notice that there's this experience that like kind of through my spine or in the back of my body now that just wasn't there before. Mm-hmm. It's almost like getting into that root chakra allowed for that like kind of whole like front and back sort of experience. Mm-hmm. And that to me is like, that's where I want to be. Turning on that whole back thing that goes my whole body, because that just feels like really – that feels really big, you know? And that front sort of sexual thing that I resonate with, like the second chakra, like being towards the front, I'm trying to like pull that energy out of there and take it through the entire body.
Yeah.
Is what I find that like my feeler is kind of naturally wanting to do, because it just feels better. It feels better for longer, mm-hmm. you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so – that's something that was totally new that I didn't experience before.
Interesting. I wonder what's going on there.
Yeah, I'm probably just a crazy person.
No, you're
but
not.
But like my life is more on the rails than it's ever been. You know, like I feel more at home in my own skin,
there
even when things go bad.
Yeah.
You know, even when they go really bad, even things get really scary, even when. You know, that to me is the bonus.
Well, thank you, Chase. Thanks for telling your story. And there's a lot there.
But I have loved just the conversation. I love talking with you. I thank you so much for inviting me here, Susanna.
Well, Chase, thank you. I can't wait to hear more about where it takes you.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, if there's more discoveries, I'll be sure to let you know.
And there you have it. That's a wrap for today's episode. If you want to learn more about Chase and all of the things that he discussed in this episode, head on over to my website at www.blissrunner.com. There, in the show notes for this episode, you can find links to many of the things that we discussed. And please join me in 2 weeks for another episode of the Bliss Runner podcast. Until then, I remain blissfully yours.